This is a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
Tēnā koutou I tēnei ata, kei te whakurunga mai koe ki te reo I rirangi ko tahi. Ko Zach toku ingoa.
Ko Amiria tēnei.
And you're listening to the Radio 1 Te Reo Irirangi o ko, you're listening to the Radio 1 Te Reo Irirangi ko tahi news show for Ramere te tekau mā toru o Haratua.
Coming up on today's program, we have our weekly segment Business as Usual with economics lecturer Trent Smith to talk about supermarkets, what a market duopoly is, and exploring effects on product prices following Countdown and Foodstuff's recent scheme announcements. Then we'll have a feature from Zach looking at an exhibit in the Dunedin Public Art Gallery, which examines the South Pacific trade slave, the artist's relationship with it, and a local shipwreck rumoured to have been connected with the trade.
After that, we'll present the astrology report for the Good, the Bad, the Libra, and the Scorpio. And finally, we'll catch up with Michelle Driscoll from the Otago Farmers Market to hear what's fresh and in season at the market tomorrow morning. But before all that, we have weather.
The Radio 191 FM weather.
No naene on Ramere, te tekau mā toru o Haratua. It looks like we'll have a high of 16 with a low of 10. The day will be fine with increasing high cloud and northerlies. It's advised you wear 1 to 2 layers today, and be aware there'll be some light winds of 2 kilometres an hour with some gusts of 4 kilometres an hour. Fire season is restricted and the danger is expected to be low.
Then for Rahiroi Saturday, the 14th of May, we have a high of 17 and a low of 8 degrees in Aotearoa. Occasional rain developing and easing to drizzle later on. Northwesterlies turning southerly in the afternoon. Sunrise at 7:49 a.m. and sunset at 5:20 p.m.
Fantastic. Up next we have Lips by Freddie Bardot, and then we'll be joined by economics professor Trent Smith to talk about supermarkets and the duopolies and some recent price freezes. Take care, gang. We'll see you very soon. Kia ora and welcome back to the Ramere News Show here on Radio 1, Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. That was Supermarket by Otipoti Locals, Opposite Sex.
Now we're back with Trent Smith from the Department of Economics here at Otago University for this week's instalment of Business as Usual on R1 News. Today we'll be tackling the topic of supermarkets, what a duopoly is and how food product prices work. Kia ora, Trent, are you there?
Kia ora, Miria, yes.
How's it going?
I'm well, thanks.
Great. So in New Zealand, we have a duopoly in the supermarket market, which means there are two main suppliers being Foodstuff, which is New World, Pack and Save, Foursquare, and then Woolworths and Zed, which is Countdown. Can you tell us a bit more about what a duopolistic market is and how it functions?
To be honest, the fact that there are two companies is, there might as well be one. This duopolies typically work like this, where if there are only two big players in the market, they get to know each other and they watch what each other do, and they typically almost behave almost like they're a monopolist, right? They match each other's prices. You'll sometimes see I'm not sure the supermarkets do this, but many stores will offer like a price match guarantee.
Yeah.
And so when you do that, it looks like it's a great thing for consumers, but what it is it's a threat to your competitor, right? What you wind up finding is that typically there's not much price competition when you have these, just a few big players and things like price guarantees out there.
Mm-hmm. And so what effect would, like, breaking a duopoly have? Consumer New Zealand has started a petition to get governments to set up a state-owned wholesaler or ensure some access to smaller chains and new entrants. Things like Night and Day want to get into the market, and there's a Costco opening up in Auckland. Would these things be beneficial?
I would say something needs to be done. I mean, it's kind of fast. So in economics, we sometimes talk about chain store economics, and you can think of these big supermarkets as being chain stores, right? They have branded stores all over the country. And the way chain store economics works is, you've got these big, big one or two players in the industry, and they're so big that they can, own their own warehouse space, and they can own their own trucking, their own trucks, and, build this big logistical system that that allows them to operate at much lower cost than small players can.
Yeah.
And so what they do with that power then is the bad thing, right? So it's you would think it'd be a good thing that they're more efficient, they're lowering costs. That should mean they should be able to deliver at lower price. And in principle they can, and in fact they actually do. We talk about monopolies or duopolies generating high prices, but the way chain stores operate is they actually cut their costs so much that they can undercut the prices of small players while still generating enormous profits.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a weird public policy problem, right? Like, in principle, these stores are offering prices lower than what the local stores can offer, but it gets worse from there, right? So what chain stores typically do, and there's a long history of this, right, in the U.S. and probably going back to the British East India Company hundreds of years ago.
Yeah.
What these big bully chain stores do is they act as bullies, right? So they bully everyone in the supply chain. So right, so they use their size to push down the wages of their employees in local labor markets. They bully their suppliers that they're buying products from because they're the biggest buyer, right? And no seller wants to offend this giant buyer.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually do some, you'll often see them doing kind of devious things where they will intentionally try to damage the competition, right? The small players that might pop up and try to take some market share from them.
Is that things like club cards and one cards? I mean, New World and Countdown had these subscription services with their like special discounts, but do they actually offer effective deals, or is it really just at the cost of general markups on products?
You would expect that the discounts you're getting with the club cards, Yeah, the way it is, the way to think of them is that, oh, they're just marking up other things and then you know, sucking you in to, with these discounts that actually should be the price for everybody, probably.
Okay. Something else I want to talk about today is the response that these big chains have had to the Consumer New Zealand inquiry. So Countdown has announced a temporary price freeze on over 500 items for the winter months. What sort of effect will this have?
Oh, did you?
Sorry?
Sorry, I couldn't hear you for a second there.
Oh, sorry. I was asking about, so Countdown's announcement of a price freeze for about 500 everyday items. What sort of impact will this have on general food prices?
Yeah, right. So it's not just Countdown. Foodstuffs also announced, I think, an even better deal for consumers, that they're, for the next 3 months or something, are actually reducing prices.
Yeah, 10% price cut, I think it was.
Yeah, on a bunch of, you know, like food staple items. So that's great news for consumers, but it's almost laughable. It's so obviously a response to these threats they're getting from the government. Right? The government's threatening regulation, right? They're threatening, in the past anyway, they've threatened to break up these big companies. And that's a very real threat. It's happened elsewhere in the world. And so this is also something you see historically. In the U.S. in the 1930s, it was the A&P grocery chain was the big bully in the supermarket business. And they were just hated. They were despised. Mm-hmm. And so there was this big political fight and all this, you know, U.S. government regulation coming in on them. And they changed their behavior, right? They you know, started allowing strong labor unions in their workforce. And you know, they cut back on some of the bullying. And because of the threat, it turned out there wasn't a lot of hands-on regulation that was needed. I mean, once they stopped the bullying, they actually became unprofitable and wound up sort of fizzling out. But, you know, you can't really count on that. I mean, it really does make sense to think about doing proactive things here. The latest Commerce Commission report actually backpedaled a lot on the idea of breaking up the duopoly or introducing a government supermarket chain.
So
it'd be better to have more tough talk, not less.
Yeah, and these two announcements have been like really temporary ones just for the winter months. So do you think it is going to make much of a difference in the public's opinion on this, you know, friction?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a political... I don't know, honestly. I would think the public is going to see through this, right? Just because it's, you know, such a blatant political play.
Yeah.
And it's also, like they're saying, it's temporary right from the outset. So I hope not, to be honest. I mean, the political pressure really needs to keep on these businesses. And it's not just supermarkets, right? We've got a duopoly in hardware. We have a duopoly in beer. And it's a problem New Zealand needs to deal with.
Yeah, yeah. And so in that, like, general idea of the politics with a duopoly, if that wasn't there, would consumers expect to pay even more when there's just these two companies raising their prices over time?
Well, yes. I mean, it's the effects of big chain stores are so insidious that they affect not just prices, but they affect product quality and variety and you know, they can quash innovation among local producers because it's less profitable to be a producer when you're dealing with these you can only sell to these big behemoths.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, but like in the supermarket industry, is that worry about variety, is it still relevant there?
Yeah, I don't know. It's maybe not that easy to see, just because when you go to the supermarket, you're overwhelmed with variety, right? But product quality probably is a real concern. And, you know, there are plenty of small producers out there that would love to be selling to you. Mm-hmm. You know, small boutique, you know, producers of gourmet locally made foods and so forth, it would be love to be selling to you through the supermarkets, but it can be really small, really hard for a small player to get a foot in the door and, you know, build a business. under the current system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for coming in and talking to us today, Trent.
My pleasure.
That was Trent Smith from the University of Otago, economist Trent Smith from the University of Otago. It is currently 11:21. Up next, we have a feature story which explores a new exhibit at the Dunedin Public Art Gallery and the South Pacific Slave Trade, which forms the basis of said exhibit. But before we get to that, here's Supermarket Kings by Owen the Moe.
That was Supermarket Kings by Owen the Moe, and before that we were talking to economist Trent Smith about the market of supermarkets, food prices, and how duopolies function. Coming up now, we have a feature from Zach about a recent exhibit at the Dunedin Public Art Gallery, which delves into the South Pacific slave trade and its supposed connection to Aotearoa. This feature covers topics of slavery and colonisation. Listener discretion is advised.
Last month, Te Whanganui Atara-based Pacifica artist Jasmine Togo Brisby installed a video exhibit at the Dunedin Public Art Gallery. The exhibit, titled Mother Tongue, explores Togo Brisby's personal relationship with the South Pacific slave trade of the 19th and 20th centuries, a trade which is commonly referred to as blackbirding. Blackbirding originated as European colonists in Australia, Peru, Mexico and other regions faced labour shortages, mainly for their coffee, sugarcane and cotton plantations. Those colonists either hired or became blackbirders who sailed around the Pacific, kidnapping or coercing islanders from areas including Papua New Guinea, the Solomon Islands, Vanuatu, Niue and Tuvalu for indentured servitude. Togo Brisby's work is centered on her reclaiming that history and processing the generational trauma that has afflicted her family, as the artist's great-great-grandparents were forcibly removed from Vanuatu as children and put to work in Queensland plantations. In Mother Tongue, gallery-goers can watch as the South Sea Islander artist rows a boat above the darkened ominous wreck of a grounded schooner in Kuputai, Port Chalmers, and as the artist rows alongside her mother and daughter, she softly sings traditional words of blessing, lament, and reclamation. The vessel that Togo Brisby and their kin maneuver around is named Rosalia, but is better known by its former name, the Don Juan. Don Juan adds significance to Mother Tongue, as historian Ian Church proclaimed that the ship was once used for blackbirding. This claim contributes to a larger historical romanticism surrounding Don Juan and the local cultural imagination, as others have alleged the ship was a Spanish slave ship, a pirate ship, and a blockade runner in Peru. Despite these stories, local historian Charles Clark says Don Juan was never involved with blackbirding, but that the ship was involved with a notorious Chinese indentured labor trade in South America, a trade which was internationally despised for its cruelty.
She did three voyages carrying around about 450 Chinese indentured laborers from Macau to Callao in Peru. The recruitment process was one of coercion and blackmail and thuggery, really. And the conditions on the ships were very, very bad. And in fact, one of Rosalia's voyages, they lost 64 Chinese laborers.
Clark unraveled Don Juan's history in two visits to London, where he looked at official documentation of the ship's mercantile activities in the 1860s. Clark says that ultimately, the historical romanticism behind the Don Juan is born out of its intricate history, and that grand stories often leave a greater impression than the truth.
She was a complicated ship. The fact that she had four names adds a great complication to working out what she did. The fact that she flew the flags of six different countries during the time she had four names is also another complicating factor. The romantic history, of course, of any ship like that, when you say that the vessel is a pirate ship or a slave ship, that's what sticks in people's imagination. If you say she carried a piano from Valparaiso to San Francisco, nobody's really interested in that very much.
Regardless of the Don Juan's history, the history of blackbirding is etched into the lives of many South Sea Islanders whose families were abducted and forced to work in plantations in Australia and beyond. The horrific practice only officially ended in Australia in 1904, which former head of anthropology and archaeology at the University of Otago, Jacqueline Leckie, points out is unsurprisingly due to racism and the economic benefit of cheap labour.
When it ended, the Melanesians who were in Australia, who were in Queensland, the majority of them were sent back to their islands. And only a small amount were allowed to stay in Australia. And many Melanesians who had settled in Australia, they didn't want to go back because they were used to living in Queensland.
Dr. Frances Steele, who specialises in researching and teaching Pacific history, highlights that indentured Pacific labour lay the foundations of the Queensland sugar industry, an industry which now generates around $1.5 billion Australian dollars per annum.
Its growth really relied on these workers. They're the backbone of this whole industry over that 40-year period of growth in Queensland. The industry itself wouldn't have functioned without them. It's still seen as a very central part of the identity of that region.
Dr. Steele added that one means of reparations for the descendants of blackbirded labourers is the redistribution of wealth from a fund established during the blackbirding era. This fund was supposed to send the wages of deceased labourers back to their families, but Dr. Steele says this never happened, and instead the fund ballooned as more indentured labourers died, especially those working in sugar plantations.
Unfortunately, this industry has one of the largest death rates of any migrant group. We think up to about a third of people would have perished or died of diseases in the context of this work as well. So this fund really grew over time. And so there's been some work done to establish how many millions today that's equivalent to. So the sense that these wages should be returned, I think, and the acknowledgement that they were misappropriated in the first place is a very important first step, as well, I think, as an apology too for this history, that many people would feel that is an important first step too. Growing an awareness of this past and just a heightened understanding of this aspect of Australia's history.
The fact that this aspect of Australian history isn't well known makes hearing the stories of South Sea Islanders like Jasmine Togo Brisby all the more important. If you'd like to view Togo Brisby's Mother Tongue exhibit, you should pay a visit to the Dunedin Public Art Gallery in the Octagon before the exhibit leaves on Te Tiko Marua or Pipiri, June the 12th.
Kia karapu koe ki te kōrero I te reo Māori.
Kia ora, Zach. That was a feature looking at the new Dunedin Public Art Gallery exhibit, which focuses on the South Pacific slave trade and the artist's personal relationship with it. Up next, we have their astrology report, but before that, we have The Old Man's Back Again by Scott Walker.
I've seen a hand, I've seen a vision. It was reaching through the clouds to risk a dream. A shadow crossed the sky, and it crushed it to the ground, just like a beast. The old man's back again. The old man's back again. I seen a woman standing in the snow. She was silent as she watched them take her man. Teardrops burned her cheeks, for she thought she'd heard the shadow had left this land. The old man's back again. The old man's back again. The crowds just gathered, their faces turned away, and they queue all day like dragons of disgust. Older women whispering, wondering just what these young hotheads want of us. And Andre V, he cries, with eyes that ring like chimes. His anti-worlds go spinning through his head. He burns them in his dreams. For half awake, they may as well be dead. The old man's back again. I see he's back again. I see a soldier, he's standing in the rain. For him there's no old man to walk behind. Devoured by his pain, bewildered by the faces who pass him by. He'd like another name, the one he's got's a curse. These people cry. Why can't they understand? His mother called him Ivan, then she died. The old man's back again.
She left me lonely in a 7-bedroom home. Built upon the bones of fallen soldiers. I don't recall putting that picture on the wall. The one of mother and child at Easter time. I hear strange things creeping in the night. I have strange dreams in the bed where Lucy died. That Lucy died was the hottest of the summer. Her family all stood around this wedding. When she expired, they all went back to the city. I've never seen a living soul again.
Morena, buenos dias, buona mattina. Welcome all to the most insipid radio news segment in history. That's right, you're listening to the Radio 1 Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi Astrology Report. Up first, we have the gracious and confusing Libra. Nonayane Libra, your day will commence with a peculiar energy as the moon saunters off through your sign. The moon's epic journey through Libra will elevate your mind, body, and soul. In the words of my favorite French robots, this will make you harder, better, faster, stronger. Sadly, all good things must come to an end. Prepare to be in for some chop later in the Arvo, Libra, as Luna enters a series of unfortunate aspects in the azure sky. You may begin to feel as though you're just being pulled in too many different directions, but this is just your mind playing tricks on you, Libra. Be sure to focus on your breath in order to find your center and really ground yourself in the real world. If you need a nice serene environment to detox from your cosmic misfortune, I recommend you go to visit Castle Street on a crisp Sunday morning. Take a deep breath and inhale the assortment of pheromones and trash. Have a look at the seagulls and mollyhawks tearing into garbage bags and McDonald's scraps. They aren't bothered by anything. All they know is eat trash, yell relentlessly, and fly. You could learn a thing or two by taking note of these majestic seafaring creatures, Libra.
Now, you devilish Scorpios, today is a day for emotional hashtag gains. Hallelujah! As the shared Libra moon creates a supportive bond with Beta Mercury, you'll feel comfortable sharing some of your deepest secrets with your bestest buds. Just make sure you're telling the right person. We wouldn't want a repeat of June 2020 now, would we? Your love life could also see some major developments in the near future, Scorpio. You can thank the cosmic alliance between Taurus Sun and the North Node for making your winter a little less lonely.
Shout out Taurus Sun and the North Node!
As the day goes on, you'll feel a sudden urge to call up your vulture-like property managers to fix the oven. But you've done enough emotional labor today, Scorpio. Leave it for tomorrow and get some shut-eye.
That was today's astrology report. Now up next we have Otago Farmers Market Manager Michelle Driscoll joining us for our weekly off-to-market segment. But before that, we have Monty Python with Galaxy Song. Stay tuned.
Whenever life gets you down, Mrs. Brown, and things seem hard or tough, and people are stupid, obnoxious or daft, and you feel that you've had quite enough, just remember that you're standing on a planet that's evolving and revolving at 900 miles an hour. That's orbiting at 90 miles a second, so it's reckoned a sun that is the source of all our power. The sun and you and me and all the stars that we can see are moving at a million miles a day. In an outer spiral arm at 40,000 miles an hour of the galaxy we call the Milky Way. Our galaxy itself contains 100 billion stars. It's 100,000 light years side to side. It bulges in the middle, 16,000 light years thick, but out by us it's just 3,000 light years wide. We're 30,000 light years from galactic central point. We go round every 200 million years. And our galaxy is only one of millions of billions in this amazing and expanding universe. Keeps on expanding and expanding in all of the directions it can whiz. As fast as it can go, at the speed of light, you know, 12 million miles a minute, and that's the fastest speed there is. So remember when you're feeling very small and insecure, how amazingly unlikely is your birth. And pray that there's intelligent life somewhere up in space, 'cause there's bugger all down here on Earth.
New Zealand On Air, happily busting out the checkbook so you don't have to. Thanks, New Zealand On Air. You rule.
Of life, a course of thousand bus out.
Kia ora and welcome back to the Ramere News Show here on Radio 1 Te Reo I Rangi Kotahi. It is currently 11:48.
We just heard Vegetables by the Beach Boys, and now we're talking with Michelle Driscoll, manager of the Otago Farmers Market, to see what's fresh this weekend. Kia ora, Michelle. How's it going?
Good, thank you. Morena.
What's happening at the market tomorrow?
Well, we're open, and we've got nuts. Which are the first of the season. We've got fresh almonds, which is an unusual one, and walnuts from NZ Nuts. So they've got all sorts of varieties, like, I don't even know how to pronounce it, but Frankwheat and Vena and Hartley cultivars. And they're also going to give some of their customers a little bag of chestnuts away for a little freebie as well, so that's really nice. But that'll be good to see them back for the season. Also, a few yams as well around.
Whereabouts are these nuts grown?
They are, good question, it's South Otago, and I can't exactly remember off the top of my head where she is now. She's only there for very short seasons usually, but it'll come to me in a minute.
That's fantastic. And so lots of other root vegetables. You mentioned yams. What are some good things we could be cooking up with those?
That's always good with a little bit of honey and a bit of olive oil and just roast them up. But they're just such a nutrient-dense little powerhouse, really, nugget of goodness. And they're full of fiber and potassium and magnesium, and copper and vitamin C. But, yeah, they're quite amazing little, they're quite a starchy little thing, but they're a really good thing to throw into stir fries and roast. Also, Ettricks have got silver beet and their bright lights silver beet, which is the colourful silver beet. They're all $2.50 a bunch at the moment, which is a really good price, and they're spray free. So that's always a good thing to throw into everything. There's also we've also got peony tubers this week as well, which obviously you can't eat those. You wouldn't want to eat those, but so. They've all been broken up from the big peony plants at Jane Field's hydroponics, and they're just, planting those. You plant them quite deep, but you end up with amazing peony flowers, come November. So an amazing thing for planting.
Hmm. That's fantastic. Now, you mentioned silver beet. Isn't that quite a high source of iron? Correct me if I'm wrong, but yeah.
Yeah, it is. That's a goodie, that one. But also, like, the bright lights, you're getting all the colours of the rainbow, and it just looks so pretty, so that's always a good thing. And, eating in season, everything just feels and tastes that little bit extra special, really. Because we have got such short seasons, really, here for everything. Sweet corn have already gone. The stone fruit have gone, but, the next thing comes along, so if you kind of don't get in, snooze you lose if you don't get down there.
Something I really love about the market as well is the live music. Can you tell us who we've got playing this week and a little bit about them?
We've got Maplewood String Band, and they're always lovely. They'll be on at 10 o'clock, and they're just a lovely group of three of them. And Mike Smith is playing his guitar. He's usually there at 8, and there might be one or two others throughout the morning. It was lovely to see you last week at the market.
I got some really good big vegetables and marrow and pumpkins and things like
good.
That.
Nice. How long has the market been kind of getting local music acts to come and perform?
I think it's always done it.
Fantastic.
And we usually allow, up to sort of four or five buskers a morning, but obviously, in winter it might end up being less on a colder morning, but if there are musicians or buskers that are interested, all our details are on the website of how to become one. And they just basically let me know each week who's available, and then we kind of work out a roster for it. But it's always good to hear something new and different as well, so always open for that.
Yeah, keep it funky fresh, just like all the produce.
Exactly.
One thing I'm curious about, are there many hunters who maybe bring in game to sell, like venison or if they caught a pig or something and they shot it, they process the meat. Do many people do that?
At the moment, there's not. We've got wild venison with Blue Mountain Butchery. Mm-hmm. And but it kind of all goes through the butcheries at the moment. And there's lamb as well, but I mean, are you talking about wild game?
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything else wild at the moment that's sort of caught. But yeah, you can get venison from also venison from Blue Mountain Butchery.
Ah, cool.
And that's sort of from the, they get it sort of, they're in Tapu Nui, but they kind of get it in that South Otago region. Can't exactly remember who they get that from in the end, but they've got, it's all traceability. Everyone knows where everything comes from.
Mm-hmm.
At their stalls, then authentic farmers market.
That's good.
I was going to say too, you know, shopping at your farm, you know, shop at your farmers markets wherever you are in the country. You know, there is always an alternative to the duopolies of the supermarkets. You know, as that conversation you had earlier today, which is really interesting. You know, we've always got options, and all the farmers markets around the country do have options, and usually a cheaper option to buy fresh produce.
It's fantastic, absolutely fantastic. Mm. Do you have anything else you'd like to ask Amelia?
No, that all sounds great. Looking forward to the market tomorrow.
Right. Great, yep.
Thank you so much for joining us, Michelle.
You're welcome. Thank you. And shop your way around Otago this weekend.
Will do.
See you later.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
That was Michelle Driscoll, one of the general managers at the Otago Farmers Market, talking about what's good in season. Got some, silver beet and some yams.
Yeah, and some fresh nuts. First time at the market this year.
These nuts. All right, I had to say that. Up next, we have 1979 by the Smashing Pumpkins. It is currently 11:55 on the Uramere News Show. And then after that, we'll be doing a little outro. But yeah, first up, Smashing Pumpkins.
Cool kids never have a time.
Kia ora and welcome back to the Uramere News Show here on Radio 1 Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. It is currently 11:58 and we just heard from the Smashing Pumpkins with 1979. It's been quite a packed show today, hasn't it, Amiria?
Yeah, we talked to economist Trent Smith about supermarkets, how duopolies work, all the different ideas around food prices and product prices, what can be done and what is being done about that.
Yeah, it was quite a fascinating conversation. And then we heard from my feature, which was regarding a Dunedin Public Art Gallery exhibit, which opened up in April, and the themes of the South Pacific slave trade that it deals with. And then we spoke to a local authority on the history of a shipwreck that's mentioned in that exhibit, and I spoke to two other academics on the blackbirding slave trade in general, just to get kind of a feel for what the actual history of it is.
Then, as always, we had our astrology report for Libra and Scorpio this week.
And then after that, we head off to market with Michelle Driscoll, the market manager of the Otago Farmers Market, to see what's happening and what's fresh in season. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and so that's been our show for R1 News on Ramere, Friday the 13th of May. Up next, we have Mortal Orchestra with Weekend Run. And remember to tune in weekdays, 11 to 12 a.m. for your dose of current events on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi.
That's been Amiria and Zach. Stay based. Puritia kia raka.
Friday, Friday, I can't believe it.
Thanks for listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. There are heaps more at r1.co.nz.